70 marvellous years. To celebrate the 70th birthday of that legendary actress, Dame Angela Marvel, we present a rather special programme featuring Dame Angela herself and Sir Kenneth Shandy. It's introduced by Peter France.
Dame Angela Marvel first acted with Sir Kenneth Shandy about 50 years ago in a production of Peter Pan, and their long and distinguished stage partnership continues. They talked to me recently at Dame Angela's home near Wimbledon Common, and they recreated for me some of their most notable performances together. For example, their memorable Antony and Cleopatra.
I am dying, Egypt, dying. Only I hear importune death a while, until of many thousand kisses the poor last I lay upon thy lips.
I dare not, dear. Dear my lord, pardon. I dare not, lest I be taken. Not the imperious show of the full-fortuned Caesar ever shall be broached with me. If knife, drugs, serpents have age, sting, or operation, I am safe. But come, come, Antony. Help me women. We must draw thee up. Assist, good friend.
Oh, quick, or I am gone.
Here, spot indeed. Oh, how heavy weighs my lord.
Oh, Angela, ouch, what are you doing?
Sorry, Kenneth. Oh. Mr. France, dear, I just can't lift him. I have to watch my back, you know.
Perhaps I can help her. Yes, you'll watch her front, too. That pendant you're wearing is very sharp.
I am dying, Egypt, dying. Give me some wine and let me speak a little.
Dame Angela, although Antony and Cleopatra was one of your greatest successes with Sir Kenneth, wasn't it during its run you were made a dame?
Yes, Mr. France, of the British Empire. Kenneth, of course, had been knighted the year before.
Yes, knight bachelor.
Knight errant, more like it, dear, after your four tiny trips to the altar.
I was going to say, Dame Angela, that in fact it was Peter Pan that had such an important influence on your career, and Sir Kenneth's too.
Yes, I made my first bow on the professional stage as Peter.
And it was in that production, Sir Kenneth, that you first met Dame Angela.
Yes.
Kenneth played one of the lost boys.
I am a few years younger than Dame Angela, actually.
Tootles, weren't you, dear? I used to slip you the odd piece of fudge while I flew round the stage.
Yes, ruined my diction and most of my teeth.
And you used to give me the odd pinch, little monkey.
Dame Angela, when you played Peter Pan, which was your favourite scene?
Oh, the one where Peter asks the children in the theatre to save Tinkerbell.
Audience participation, they call it now.
And what a response I used to get from the little blighters.
Yes, orange peel, toffee papers.
I say, now look, I've had a brainwave. Let's have a bash at that scene, just for fun.
Oh, no, really, Angela, at your age?
Peter Pan was ageless, dear. Fairies are. You can read Sir James Barry's stage directions. I met Barry once, you know, such a shy little mouse. Then, Kenneth, I want you and Mr. France to clap your hands at the right moment.
Oh, yes.
And Bunty, too. Come over here, Bunty.
All right.
My dearest friend and colleague, Mr. France, dear, little Barbara Gossage, known to me as Bunty. You've supported me in so many shows, haven't you, dear?
I've always tried to help.
Yes, well, stop mumbling, Bunty, and just get me the copy of Peter Pan, will you?
This is the scene after Captain Hook and the pirates have kidnapped the children.
Yes, Peter Pan is asleep in the home under the ground, and Hook has poured poison in his medicine.
Can't say I blame him.
And Tinkerbell, loyal wee thing, drinks the stuff. Why, Tink, you have drunk my medicine.
She flutters strangely about the room, answering him now in a very thin tinkle.
Tink, dear Tink, are you dying?
He has never called her dear Tink before, and for a moment she is gay. She alights on his shoulder, gives his chin a loving bite, whispers, "You silly ass," and falls on her tiny bed.
She says she thinks she could get well again if children believed in fairies.
He rises and throws out his arms. He knows not to whom, perhaps to the boys and girls of whom he is not one.
Do you believe in fairies? Say quick that you believe. If you believe, clap your hands. Oh, go on.
Tink is saved.
Not with those mingy clappers, she isn't.
Oh, get on, they're doing their best.
Oh, thank you. And now to rescue Wendy.
Dame Angela, Sir Kenneth, thank you very much indeed. You recaptured the atmosphere of the scene perfectly.
Oh, quiet, Parkin. That will do. Down. I'm afraid you're rather too small a doggy to play Nana.
What's he called, Angela?
Parky. Yes, you know, I appeared on the Parkhurst show.
Parkinson.
You saw it, did you, Mr. France? Oh, I do like Parky.
Asked you about your sex life, didn't he, Angela?
And I said to him, in the words of our greatest playwright, Mr. Parkhurst, it's much ado about nothing. Oh, that floored him.
And your little dog's appropriately a Yorkshire Terrier.
More or less.
But let's go back, shall we, to the early 1930s. By then, Dame Angela, you and Sir Kenneth had established yourselves as a very popular stage couple.
Yes, we did seem to make a kind of theatrical chemistry together. Kenneth was frightfully handsome, you know, still is.
Oh, I can't.
And I suppose I had vitality.
And then later in the 30s, you did a season of Shakespeare.
Fundamentally, you see, Angela and I were both classical performers. I'd trained my voice with Elsie Fogarty for a short time. Fogy, we called her. Wonderful woman. My vowels are pure Fogy. She gazed at me my first minute's ear, and she pointed to this, and she said, "You have a weakness there."
His diaphragm.
Yes, it's very strong now, you know, very strong.
I never trained at all.
No, you could have done with a bit of discipline.
It's all instinct with me, dear. My vowels were always open.
Your Macbeth at the end of the season is still talked about. Was it, as Macbeth so often is, unlucky?
Death at the box office. Didn't take a penny.
Nonsense. It was a great artistic success, Kenneth.
There's an old record of that production of Macbeth, which you made at the time. I know you've got a copy. Shall we hear a part of it?
Yes, why not? Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow.
Hardly, Kenneth. Lady Macbeth's passed on by that point.
Oh, all right.
Bunty, you look for the record, dear. Yes, that's it, on top of the Steinway. Next to the biscuit barrel, dear.
I think I've got to the rough
one. Yes, well done, dear. Now, put it on the gramophone. Which chunk shall we have?
I suggest the scene in Act Two, just after the murder of Duncan.
Yes. Enter Lady Macbeth. Got the right place, Bunty? That which hath made them drunk hath made me bold. What hath quenched them hath given me fire. Hark! It was the owl that shrieked. The fatal bellman, which gives the stunt good night. He is about it. The doors are open, and the surfeited grooms do mop their charge with snores. I have drugged their posses. The death of nature do contend about them, whether they live or die.
Who's there? What?
Alack, I am afraid they have awaked, and 'tis not done. The attempt and not the deed confound us. Hark, I lay their daggers ready. He could not miss them. Had he not resembled my father as he slept, I had done it. Oh, my husband!
I have done the deed. Didst thou not hear a noise?
I heard the owl scream and the cricket cry. Did not you speak?
When?
Now.
As I descended?
Aye.
Hark! Who lies in the second chamber?
Donald Bay.
This is a sorry sight.
A foolish thought. Bunty, dear, I think we'd better jump a bit further on.
Oh, of course, the record is pretty ancient, like us.
Yes, I think Dame Muriel sat on it by mistake last week when she came to tea. I've been playing it to her. Dame Muriel's an old lady friend of Kenneth's.
Very polished artiste.
Hands are of your colour, but I seem to wear a half so white. Yes, that's it, Bunty. That's the place. Re-enter Lady Macbeth.
Hey, hold on. I've got a good speech before that. No, start on the knocking, Bunty. The first knocking.
Get on your
knees. Back to whence is that knocking?
Whence is that knocking? How is it with me when every noise appalls me? What hands are here? They pluck out mine eyes. Will all great Neptune's ocean wash his blood clean from my hand? No, this my hand will rather the multitudinous seas incarnadine, making the green one red.
My hands are of your colour, but I seem to wear a heart so white. I hear a knocking at the south entry. Retire we to our chamber. A little water clears us of this deed. How easy is it then? Your constancy hath left you unattended. Hark! More knocking! Get on your nightgown, lest occasion call us, and show us to be watchers. Be not lost so poorly in your thoughts.
To know my deed, 'twere best not know myself. Wake, Duncan, with thy knocking! I would thou couldst!
Yes, that was quite wonderful. A splendid evocation, I thought. Dame Angela, your husband, Frank Gammon, played Duncan in that production.
Out, damned spot! Out, I say! Oh, yes, poor dear Frank. He was awfully good as Duncan. Such a shame he had to be murdered.
Stopped him murdering the part, anyway.
That production of Macbeth in 1937 had rather a limited run.
Well, dear, it wasn't till we started rehearsals that I discovered I was in the family way. I can't think how it happened.
Yes, old Frank's timing was never his strong point. And while she was doing that, I slipped over to Hollywood. I did a test for leading man to Betty Davis.
So good, wasn't she, in Jezebel?
Very powerful actress. This was for a costume film.
Tight suited you, dear.
They chose Errol Flynn in the end.
Even tighter.
I never made the impact, you see.
Betty Davis is a very great cinema actress, dear, but she might not have been so tolerant of your little quirks.
Quirks? What quirks?
But during the war you had a considerable success with the British film The Inconstant Moon.
I played a young Cockney sailor, able seaman Johnny Judkins, he was called.
And I was a wren, second officer Rosemary Chalfont, rather a county girl. She and Johnny fall in love.
But he's already married, poor beggar.
And then, just as Rosemary discovers that she's going to have a baby, it was quite a Frank film, you see.
Johnny gets posted to his destroyer.
Let's hear, shall we, part of the soundtrack of The Inconstant Moon. This is the scene which I suppose filmgoers in 1943 will never forget. I know I never shall. Rosemary and Johnny have what proves to be their final meeting in the railway station buffet.
Hello, sailor.
Rosie! Oh, I mean, Second Officer Chalfont, ma'am.
Off duty now, able seaman Judkins.
Oh, it's ever so good to see you, Rosie. I don't know if you're lonesome here waiting for that old train and thinking of you. Here, though, can it never be funny? Us together, me and just a matlow and you and all that gold braid. Lucky there's no officers nosing around.
I don't care, Johnny. I just don't give a damn.
Would you like a cup of tea?
No, thanks. I couldn't eat a thing.
Ah, come on, do you good. Looking a bit peaky. Miss, a cup of tea, please, and two of them sausage rolls. Ah.
Thanks, Johnny. What do you suppose is actually in this sausage roll?
Oh, wouldn't you like to know? Old Lord Walton's secret weapon, I shouldn't wonder.
Johnny.
Yes, Rosie?
There's something I think I should tell you.
Oh, yes? What's that, then?
Oh, nothing. Nothing you need worry about.
You're a funny one, aren't you? Listen, Rosie, do you know where the convoy is making for? I've only got my orders to report to Pompey, HMS Impregnable. But then what?
Yes, I do know, Johnny. Number one showed me the signal at divisions this morning. It was top secret, but he's always been a chum. I think he knows about us.
Well?
Have you got thick underwear in your kit bag, Johnny? And your balaclava? Where you're going, it will be very cold. I mustn't say any more.
Blimey, the Arctic run, eh? Oh, I get it, just my blooming luck. Thought I might be bound for the Mediterranean, wine, women and song and all that.
Oh, Johnny, don't.
Sorry, just trying to keep your pecker up, old girl.
I know. I seem to have lost my sense of humour these days. How's your wife?
Maureen? Oh, fine. Her mum's staying with her. The nippers are fine too. Shirley's got mumps and young Leslie's teething. They're ever so glad to be back in old London town. Maureen didn't take much to the country. Of course, being evacuated there ain't the same like it was for you. Living in a posh home in Rolling Acres, eh? Horse riding and drinking port wine after supper and all that. And butlers and kitchen maids.
Oh, Johnny, what does it matter? All right. So Daddy was rather well off. And we did have, well, nannies and ponies and things. And a kitchen maid, if you must know. Her name was Ruby, and now she's making munitions, bless her stout heart. But all that now seems long, long ago, in a past which has vanished forever, my darling. It won't be like that anymore, Johnny. When this ghastly war is over, there'll be a brave new world, a world where we'll all be the same, equal, and people like you and me will be free, free to love each other. Johnny, you haven't forgotten that evening.
Forgotten? What do you take me for? It was... Well, I'm not clever at expressing myself like you, but you know something? You're quite a girl, Rosie.
Thanks, Johnny. Was it as long ago as 2 months that evening? It seems like yesterday. That bus shelter, the blackout, the barrage balloons, and the moonlight. The inconstant moon.
You what?
Shakespeare, Johnny.
Oh.
And then afterwards, we went into that little farm, do you remember? And drank mild and bitter.
Yes.
Oh.
And played darts.
Yes. It was glorious. Everyone there was so cheery and belly. And they had the wireless on. We listened to Tommy Handley, didn't we? TTFN. Can I do you now, sir?
After you, Claude. No, after you, Cecil. I go, I come back.
No, Johnny. Will you? Will you come back?
Of course I will.
Oh, how I wish I could sail with you in HMS Impregnable.
Oh, you wouldn't like sleeping in them hammocks.
Is that your train?
Afraid so. Yeah. I'll have to go, Rosie. Now, where's me kit?
I'll help you with it, Johnny.
No. Just sit there, Rosie. Just sit there so that I can remember you in your rent officer's hat with your sausage roll and your cup of tea. Come on. Slip up a lip, old thing. I'll be back. What do you bet none of them old jelly torpedoes is going to have my name on them? And then it'll be, I go, I come back, and it'll all be over. And we'll see, won't we? Brave new world, like you said. Goodbye, Rosie. Wish me luck.
Oh, yes, Johnny. With all my heart. Good luck, my darling. Bon voyage. And TTFN.
Sounds a bit old-fashioned now.
Oh, poor Rosemary.
We had a very strong supporting cast. Eric Portman, Deanna Durbin, Dame May Whitty.
Deanna Durbin, dear? Surely not.
No, of course not. Lassie. No, Dulcie, that's it. Dulcie, what's her name?
And Gordon Jackson. He played a young, ordinary seaman. Scots, of course, such a moving performance.
Nice little cameo part. That's what I accept nowadays.
While he's doing his little cameos, I often read a serial for Woman's Hour.
Yes, I like these big films, the kind they do on location. One gets a bit of travel. And as Larry said to me, or it might have been Johnny, or Ralphie.
I'll just take the money, dear boy, and run.
I think it might have been Noel who said that, dear.
You both knew Noel Card, of course, in the 1930s.
Yes, Noel was one of our dearest friends.
The master.
When war broke out, we took a tour of private lives to the Welsh coalfields and army camps.
Noel very kindly came to one of our rehearsals before we left London. I'll never forget him saying to me, when I kept getting a bit of business wrong, I think it was that tussle on the sofa. He said, what did he say, Kenneth?
You said to him, but it's ridiculous. I know it like the back of my hand. And Noel said, that's just the trouble. You're playing it like the back of your hand, all fingers and thumbs.
I knew you'd remember, dear. And I said to him, very well, Noel, I'll knuckle under. I'm not sure he saw the joke.
I was very touched. At the end of our rehearsal, Noel came down through the stores. We were on stage. And looking up at us, he said, my dears, the troops don't deserve it. I certainly don't.
Wonderful, wonderful, Noel. I say, what about you and I doing a bit of private lives now, Kenneth? Just for nice Mr. France.
You come on, Angela, I don't know.
Oh, be a cherub. Bunty dear, you go and play the piano for us. Got the melody? La, 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 la. Oh, well, it'll come back to you, dear. Now, this is the famous scene on the hotel terrace in Act One. I'm going to begin on this line, have you known her long? That's Amanda asking Elliot about his new wife, Sybil. All set at the pianoforte, Bunty? You've got to pretend you're a little orchestra, dear. Quiet, Bunty, dear. You come in later. Have you known her long?
About 4 months. We met at a house party in Norfolk.
Very flat, Norfolk.
How old is dear Victor?
34 or 5. And Sybil?
I blush to tell you, only 23.
You've gone a mucker, all right.
I shall reserve my opinion of your choice until I've met dear Victor.
I wish you wouldn't go on calling him dear Victor. It's extremely irritating.
That's how I see him. Dumpy and fair and very considerate with glasses. Dear Victor.
As I said before, I would rather not discuss him. At least I have good taste enough to refrain from making cheap jibes at Sybil.
You said Norfolk was flat.
That was no reflection on her, and if she made it flatter.
Your voice takes on an acid quality whenever you mention her name.
I'll never mention it again.
Good, and I'll keep off Victor.
Thank you.
That orchestra has a remarkably small repertoire.
They don't seem to know anything but this, do they? A little one, we shall stand hand in hand.
You always had a sweet voice, Amanda.
Thank you.
I'm awfully sorry about all this, really I am. I wouldn't have had it happen for the world.
I know. I'm sorry too. It's just rotten luck.
I'll go away tomorrow, whatever happens, so don't you worry.
That's nice of you.
I hope everything turns out splendidly for you and that you'll be very happy.
I hope the same for you too.
Nasty, insistent little tune.
Extraordinary how potent cheap music is.
What on earth is that? What's that noise?
It's only the clock, dear.
There's no clock in the scene. Ah. What fix it? What exactly were you remembering at that moment?
Well, to be honest, Kenneth, dear, I was remembering it's 4 o'clock and I'm dying for a cup of tea.
Oh, really, Angela, you've ruined the scene.
No more Bunty, dear. Thank you so much. Oh, she's as deaf as a post. No more, dear. Shut up. She played Sibyl, you know, Bunty.
Very flat, Bunty.
Shush, Kenneth. She plays by ear.
Is that what it is? Well, tell her to use her hands in future.
Oh, really, Kenneth?
Dame Angela, you and Sir Kenneth have played an unusually wide range of parts.
Yes, very wide.
You've never been afraid to experiment. For instance, in the early 1960s, there was the play Rhubarb, Rhubarb.
Crumbs, yes. We mustn't forget that. The new drama.
Well, you see, Larry had jumped in at the deep end and done The Entertainer at the Royal Court, and it didn't seem to have done him any harm.
So Kenneth and I put out a few feelers for angry young men. And we were sent this script by a quite unknown playwright called Griffiths Crag.
Admittedly, it was all in North Country dialect, but I've a spot of Northamptonshire in me, on my mother's side, and Angela...
Game for anything, me. Wilfred Pickles and Mabel kindly gave me some coaching.
Yes, it was called Rhubarb, Rhubarb. It was a reference to the rhubarb fields, which I'm told are very prevalent in the industrial north. It was a very outspoken play. Angela and I played the mum and dad, Mr. and Mrs. Bargain Store.
We have 2 sons, one very clever and sensitive, and the other not. In the scene we're going to read for you... Kenneth, what are you doing at the sideboard?
Just getting into the mood of the play, my dear. Thought I'd have a glass of ale. What about you, Mr. Frantz?
No, thanks, not for the moment.
In this scene, if you're ready, Kenneth, we're in our back kitchen, and Mr. Bargain Store is taking a bath. I'm scrubbing the pit dirt from his back. It was quite an ordeal for Kenneth every night, being, well, almost nude.
Ah, yes, always had to watch my chest. Elsie Fogarty advised regular rubbing with balsam.
So here we are, Act One of Rhubarb, Rhubarb. And, Bunty, you must do the bath noises for us. Just run to the kitchen and fill the washing up bowl, dear. Now, visualize Kenneth on stage, sitting in his tin bath, smoking his pipe and looking, of course, very dirty. And in I hobble as poor old man. Got the bowl, Bunty? Good. Now, where are my specs? This script's not very clear, is it? All set, Bunty? Action. Here's a fresh kettle of hot water, Dad. I'll scrub the back, love.
Aye, and go easy with that soapy brush, Mother. You've got a fist on you as heavy as our gran's black pudding. Aye, that's right. Oh, our Mel haven't come in yet, then. Is he with that Pam Brazen again?
Nay, love. Pam Brazen's no the lass for our Melvin. He's down in public library reading more books.
Sitting on his backside all day reading books? How's that working? And our Trevor and me breaking us backs at Coalface? Nay, get off, woman. You're scrubbing me back raw. Aye, our Mel should never have won scholarship to grammar school. 11 plus, 11 minus, if you ask me.
I don't. Sit still, Duck. I've near lost me brush.
Oh, he should have gone down pit like Trev. Our Trev's a man. Aye, I know he's put young Ingrid Bickerdyke in family way.
And Rita Scargill and Sandra Clotworthy. He's not got Mel's fine feelings.
Fine feelings be jiggered. Books, books, books. He could knock skin off a rice pudding. 2 pints of blackleg brown and he's done for. Our Trev can suck 10 and he's not started.
He's started right enough. And carried on with Ingrid and Rita and that Sandra down at Mill. He takes after your dad.
Aye, well, our Trev's got red blood in his veins. Bargain stall blood. He's worried about Mel same as me. Hey, Dad, he says to me, our kid can't cut a stick of rhubarb for our mam without slicing his inky thumb off. Reckon there's something else could be sliced off and our kid not miss it. And while I thinks of it, Mother, did you shovel that load of cow muck I knackered off Charlie Barstow on rhubarb?
Aye, bonny lad, I did. Them rhubarb roots are coming up greatly, as pink and firm as a stick of Scunthorpe rock.
I reckon our Melvin's got rhubarb wilt.
Oh, go on, Bunty dear, splash away. But watch my parson rug. It's a bit damp. Or is that parking?
Oh, for goodness sake, Angela. Give over any road.
Now, where was I?
Come on.
Oh, yes. Nay, Dad, our Mel takes after Auntie Flo. Don't you mind how she were forever book reading?
Aye, Adelder Wits and all ended up in Cuckoo House.
Angela, you've lost the place. We've skipped two pages. All that stuff about Sid Mapplebeck and Gran's bad leg.
Never mind, dear. Just carry on. I'll pick it up somewhere. Dear. Nay, love, that's wickedness to say that. Our Mel thinks the world of us, his family. We're his roots, he says.
Yes, where have you got to now, Angela?
Cow muck's good for roots.
Oh, I see. Oh, yes.
Aye, cow muck's good for roots. Now give over, Mother. I'm fair clemmed. And this water's colder than a brass monkey. I'm mum gone, look at me leaks. Sid Mapplebecks have all got leak, maggot, rot.
Aye, hinny, you do that. Look to your leaks. And have a gander at them rhubarb roots, too. Aye, there's our Melvin coming up street now. I'll go smash his knee.
What?
Oh, sorry, dear. Mash his tea. It's these bifocals. I can't see a thing.
Yes, 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 Bunty, you can stop that now. Angela's ruined the scene.
Oh, you can do something to the tape, can't you, Mr. France, with your razor blade?
Yes, don't worry, Dame Angela. Would you perhaps, just to make sure, repeat that last sentence?
I'll go mash his tea. Will that tuck in, dear?
Yes, yes. Dame Angela, Sir Kenneth, thank you.
But Mr. France, dear, you haven't asked me about the poetry recital I gave.
Well, we are running out of time.
Bunty, dear, quick, my press cuttings album. That picture in the Telegraph of me opening the Angela Marvel Theatre at Surbiton.
By the way, there's a new waxwork of me in Madame Tussauds. Yours seems to have gone completely, Angela.
Just a touch of renovation, dear. It'll be back. Down, Parky. Oh, thanks, Bunty. Here are the albums, Mr. France. Now you switch off that tape thing, dear, and we'll all have a lovely browse.
Oh, look, there I am, as Falstaff.
Oh, look, and there's me as St. Joan at the stake, surrounded by flaming faggots.
And there I look with Ralphie and Michael and Alec to see that one of me better.
In 70 Marvellous Years, Dame Angela Marvel and Sir Kenneth Shandy were talking to Peter France. Also taking part were Kenneth Williams and Arthur Marshall. And we apologise for the fact that the unedited recording of the programme first heard on Boxing Day was broadcast once again. The producer was Pamela Howe.